Welcome to the Airplane Geeks Podcast. This is episode 107 of the show where we talk aviation. I'm Max Flight, and with me is David Vanderhoof. Hi, David.
Hi, Max. And Max, it looks like our listeners are going to have a duet today instead of the usual quartet, right?
That's right. It's looking that way. Both Dan Webb and Rob Mark are at Oshkosh for AirVenture 2010. Dan will definitely not be joining us. He's got some conflicts, but he did send in a recording covering airline earnings reports from the past week, so we'll be listening to that. Rob Mark is supposed to join us, but he hasn't surfaced yet. He may be hunting down Wi-Fi or trying to hunt down Wi-Fi at Oshkosh. So we'll see if he joins us. Otherwise, David, it's you and me, bud.
Well, it'll be a sound effect less podcast with the other two out.
Yeah, hopefully. All right, so coming up, we're going to have, of course, David's This Week in Aviation, and we have our report from the Australia desk from Steve and Grant, and we have some listener mail and also a couple of great listener recordings that we're going to play for you. So, David, you're ready to start out with a little bit of news.
Let's rock.
Big news from the preceding week, it was Farnborough, of course. Farnborough 2010 just concluded. And as we requested, a couple of our listeners who were at the show sent in some reports. First one comes from Tim and Grace. Grace is actually Tim's daughter, who's 8 years old. And both of them sent in the recording that we're going to play in a second. Tim says that it was an amazing show. He said he's never seen such a combination of commercial aviation, military, and GA, in addition to the trade show, for everything commercial, military, and otherwise. He says there were also wonderful educational opportunities, too many to describe. Tim also says the other standout, people from all over Europe and military aircraft from all over. The most interesting, a Boeing 737 radar-equipped, looked a little like an AWACS for the Turkish Air Force. Tim and Grace recorded their report on Tim's iPhone, and let's give them a listen.
Hi, this is Tim Deerhammer.
And Grace Deerhammer.
When we're reporting from the Farnborough Air Show 2010. Grace, how old are you?
8.
And Grace, tell us about the Red Arrows.
They were spectacular.
And what was special about the Red Arrows this year?
They had the first ever female to drive one.
Yep, and there was a wonderful display from the United States military. There was a great flyover by an A380, which was pretty amazing, as well as a British Vulcan aircraft, which you don't see very often, F-16, F-18, and the Eurofighter.
There was 30 altogether.
At least, and hundreds of static displays, and it was a very fascinating air show, different from any in the United States that we've been to, or that I've been to, because it's such a mixture of commercial, general, as well as military aviation, and also the people who make all the parts and tools and things that are required for aviation.
And they even, they're all together in the whole place. They had, I don't know, about 100-something planes all together.
Mm-hmm. It was an amazing experience, wasn't it, Grace?
Yep.
Should people come to Farnborough in 2012?
I think they really should, because it's a fabulous show. They have, souvenirs and loads of things. I think they should really come.
Me too. And I'll tell you one other secret about Farnborough is that all the kids' activities are actually free. And the kids are free if they're under 16. So it's a great day for the whole family.
There's bungee jumping and there's bouncy castles. There's arts and crafts. There's loads of activities for your child.
And lots of educational activities as well to encourage the next generation.
And everyone will be older on their next experience and understand more.
That's right. So this is Tim and
Grace
Deerhammer signing off from England, and we love the Airplane Geeks Podcast. You guys keep up the good work.
Again. Do it for Mama.
What a great report.
Fantastic report. Can we get Grace to replace Dan?
Yeah, that might be a great idea. That might be a fantastic idea. You know, having not been to Farnborough, I guess I never really thought about it as a family kind of event, and didn't realize that there were actually activities and things that could keep children interested. So that was really cool to hear.
Well, you know, I mean, it's a little different for us airplane geeks. You know, at an air show, of course, there's stuff to keep us occupied. There's airplanes.
Yeah, of course.
Tim, to answer Tim's question about the funky 737, to do my best Grant McCarran, that's a wedge tail, otherwise known as a flying toaster. what it is a AEW&C. He was right. It's an AWACS sort of, but Turkey bought them under the Peace Eagle program, and it's a scanned array, a radar, and it doesn't need to turn like our famous AWACS with the big dish on the top.
Oh, right, yeah.
But it's airborne early warning and command. So it's the newest version, a lower profile than our EA-3s, but a very new program. That's why Boeing was anxious to show it. Australia's getting Wedgetails. They're in the process of finishing up that program. And the Republic of Korea, South Korea, is PSI, which is they will also be getting them. So there's three countries now flying these baby AWACSs.
All right, very good. We also got a recording from our listener, Huss. He wrote in and said, it was a really great day, and it's re-inspired me to get back on my blog. My friend had an SLR camera, so hopefully I'll be able to put up quite a nice high-quality gallery along with the blog post in a couple of weeks' time. People can get to my blog by going to my homepage, which is www.hustechlabs.com, then going to blog on the top menu, and that's HUSSTECHLABS. So Huss sent this in.
Hey geeks, it's Huss here, 24th of July on the Farnborough International Air Show 2010. It's a really sunny day, everyone's having a great time. There's at least 100,000 people here easily. We found a nice spot just on top of a hill, standing behind a British Airways Airbus A319. Looking over a Global Hawk RQ-4. And just in front of us now, the Airbus A380 is being pushed out in position to start off the flying display for today. I can see loads of aircraft there. In the distance, I can see Eurofighter Typhoon parked up. That'll be coming in about halfway through the show. I'm standing next to Northrop Grumman stand. On my right side, there's a Boeing stand. I'm in front of her Airbus stand. Looks like it's going to be a great day, great show, and lucky today that the weather's holding up and it's a nice sunny day. So now I'm walking back down the runway trying to find a good spot for the air show, and walking past the American firepower. They have brought a lot of aircraft here. I can see an F-16, F-18, F-15, but they brought the heavy lift C-17, Sikorsky, Black Hawk helicopter. Well, we found a temporary spot at least, and right in front of us, sitting on idle, is the A380 about to take off. We are literally just under 100 meters away from it, and it'll be an awesome sight when that thing takes off. If someone orders some heavy lift capability, because here's the C-130J Hercules. Here's an F-16 just been given clearance to taxi out onto the runway to get into position for this display. This is going to be very good. And here comes a Chinook carrying nothing less than a Jeep underneath it. I'm mistaken, a Jeep and a trailer, that's very important. F-18 Super Hornet holding it at the start of the runway, here it comes. Taking off now, Eurofighter Typhoon. We've had some American shows, now let's see what the Europeans can do. Takes off straight into the right hand bank, comes around. Well, that's it. Great show. Great day for my first Farm Air show. It was incredible. Loved it from start to finish. F-16 was brilliant. F-18 was brilliant. Typhoon was brilliant. All the fast jets were great. Really good show. We got a lot of photos today, so I'm probably going to write up a post on my blog. Hopefully in the next couple of weeks I'll get that all up there. I think we took 780 photos, so we're going to have to sift through and find some good ones. Miss Huss, Farm Bear Show, goodbye.
All right, well, that was great. You know, David, both those recordings were just made with iPhones, so it's pretty easy to do, and maybe we'll get some listeners to send us some recordings from their Oshkosh experiences.
Yeah, that would be really cool. I mean, it is kind of amazing. It's real easy, folks. Just sit out there, hit record on your iPhone, or if you're in my case, you'd use a tape recorder. But it's real easy, and we love listening to it. It's kind of a neat knowing that there's a segment that we don't have to do.
Yeah, that's right. Now, when you say tape recorder, you don't mean that literally, right?
No, I have a MP3 recorder. Okay. So it's a small little handheld little device. But
You scared me a little bit there, David.
Oh, I'm old school. Don't you know that? I like things with radials, and I like tape recorders. And, you know, I have my slingback tape recorder with a wire mic, and, you know, and just walk up to people and they look at me like I'm really nuts.
Yeah, what is
no,
this
folks, for? That's not really how it happens. But
all right. So again, we'd like to thank Tim, Grace, and Huss for sending in their Farnborough impressions. But we also have Rob Mark. Rob has joined us now. Rob, you there?
I finally made it to Oshkosh, or as David calls it, Sloshkosh. They had a few problems, a little rain up here.
A little bit
so
of a damp.
Grounds are a little mushy, and traffic coming up through Milwaukee was terrible. I had to drive.
Yeah.
It's really a tough thing to have to drive to an airport.
Yeah, there's something wrong about that, isn't there?
Yeah, it doesn't seem right. I don't know why, but
given the weather conditions, Rob, it's the only way to get to that airport, evidently.
Apparently, and it did get better up here. The weather up here is really beautiful now. It's probably about 78 and sunny, and just not a whole lot of people. So hopefully that's going to change a little bit.
Sure, I'm sure. Okay, well, we can return to our Farnborough news items and come back after that and maybe talk a little bit more about what Oshkosh is looking.
So you mean I don't get to talk to Dan?
No, not at least not on the podcast. But hopefully you'll run into him soon at Oshkosh. All right, the first item that we wanted to touch on from Farnborough is from CNN. This is Stephen Udvar-Hazy, Farnborough's biggest dealer. Udvar-Hazy, of course, was the guy who created ILFC, International Lease Finance Corporation, which is, I don't know, probably the largest aircraft financing company in the world, I would guess.
I would say that because I learned that on my Udvar-Hazy trip
from
Boy Wonder. So, yes, I'll verify that that's at least Boy Wonder City, it was the largest corporation.
So earlier this year, he left, and apparently, as he relates in this CNN report, and there's a video in that report, too, that he was retired for about 3 minutes and couldn't stand it any longer. So he's gone and formed a new company, Air Lease Corporation. At Farnborough, Udvar-Hazy really launched the new company to include an order of 51 A320s, up to 60 Boeing 737-600s, and up to 20 Embraer E190s. So it's kind of a big start, but also maybe the news item is that the leasing company action seemed to be pretty strong at Farnborough. And, you know, maybe they're a kind of a leading indicator that helps the notion that we're kind of coming out of the recovery, or at least maybe the aviation industry is.
Well, he should have said, go ahead, Rob.
No, I was just going to say, if there's anybody that could probably make this work, it's him. I mean, that man could start this company on his reputation, on his Rolodex. What? Does anybody have a Rolodex anymore? Probably not.
Probably not.
Whatever the iPhone equivalent of the Rolodex is, I guess. But, you know, he's the kind of guy that could make a few phone calls and people would be jumping through hoops, I think, to sign on. So this is probably a good sign, though, that I think that he believes that it's time to start buying airplanes again.
Yeah, and he was also interviewed over at Flight Global, where he said that he's looking to have between 100 and 120 aircraft on the books, on his books, by next spring. And over the next 5 years, he's looking to have 350 to 400 aircraft under Air Lease Corporation. So the numbers are big. But an interesting quote, though, he said that he wants to be the best, not necessarily the biggest. But I think a guy like Uvar Hazy could be either or both.
Yeah, and I think that, but it does sort of bode to the discussion that these, all the airlines and such that came out with their earnings this week, is cautious optimism.
Right.
Uvar Hazy is not running out and buying thousands of airplanes. He's buying hundreds. So in a warped sort of way, it's a way of saying, yeah, it's starting to happen, but no, it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, David, I think that's it's right. It's too early to be wildly enthusiastic about a recovery, but the signs are there. In other Farnborough lease company news, Superjet, the Russian airplane, obtained an order from Pearl Aircraft Corporation. They're a Bermuda-based aircraft leasing company. They negotiated, it's a total of 65 Superjets, 30 firm, 15 option, and 20 purchase rights. So this the Superjet, of course, is from Sukhoi, and it the company's actually 25% owned by Finmeccanica from Italy, but it's primarily Russian, and it would represent the first Russian airliner since the breakup of the Soviet Union, so there are certainly a lot of eyes on that. This is a $900 million deal. Of course, all the deals announced, those are always list prices. Actual price paid typically bears very little, or can bear very little resemblance to the list price. But at list price, it's just shy of $1 billion, which is about the same level that Superjet also placed earlier in the week with the Indonesian airline Kartika, I guess you would pronounce it. So interesting, you know, I think there was a lot of people were wondering what kind of a start Superjet would get in the global market, and it looks like they're kind of off and running.
Well, it does mean it's a viable aircraft. I mean, they're not Boeing Airbus purchases, but it's nothing to sneeze at. So there is a market out there for it.
Right, and these orders are outside of the planes that Aeroflot had previously ordered. There's also Malev has from Hungary has an order for 30. So these were significant, I think, at the air show because they're, you know, outside of Russia or that you know, sphere of influence. So yeah, good for them.
Aren't all these shows kind of focused these days on how many orders, who got, and of course we want to pick on Bombardier, but everybody was focused on what they didn't have, or what they didn't get, at this point in time, I don't think it's really a big deal that they don't have a lot of orders yet, but it's amazing how it becomes a one-upmanship game,
Yeah,
it's amazing how this becomes a one-upmanship game.
Yeah.
Of who has more orders.
Well,
don't
you know,
think,
that is interesting.
David?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was trying to figure that out all week. If I would keep going, okay, who's winning?
You were just
the
trying
race?
To figure out what I was saying is what you were trying to figure out.
But you know, Bombardier, I mean, Airbus came out with $13 billion. Boeing came out with $10 billion. So, I mean, yeah, it's who's got the more dollars at the end of the show. Now, the question is how much of that, what I want to know is how much of those are real actual sales at the show, or how many of them are, they were done 6 months ago, but they
right.
decided to make a splash. They announced them at Farnborough. You know, that's
right.
Well, that's
there's a game there.
Yeah, there's a bit of a game. I think although Boeing, you know, maybe to try to explain that their numbers weren't as large as Airbus's. I saw one report where someone from Boeing said that this year they were not saving up a kitty of orders so that they could announce them at Farnborough. But, you know, these deals don't happen in a short period of time. I mean, it takes months and literally sometimes years to negotiate these kinds of large deals. And so it's, you know, with regard to Bombardier and the C-Series, yeah, people would have been, you know, kind of pleasantly excited if they'd been able to announce a buy at Farnborough. But, you know, you're not going to announce a buy. You're not going to conclude the negotiations or just so that you can make an announcement at an air show. I mean, the dollars and the stakes are much higher than that. So, you know, it's all, you know, it's just a matter of timing.
Are you saying that you think that some of this was just public relations?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for shame.
Yeah, this is one of the largest public relations events.
I can't believe anyone would do that just for ratings.
Well,
hey, listen, we could probably use a little these days, don't you think?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Boeing, you know, brought the 787 over for a short period of time. And,
right.
You know, and it was just a static display. I mean, pretty much. Although upon departure, the 787 was joined by a couple of Spitfires. And we have an interesting YouTube video that we'll put in the show links. But, you know, some of the sound from that I thought was pretty interesting. As the plane approached in this YouTube video, I mean, I think you mostly heard the 787, but as it got closer, the sound of the Spitfires was kind of impressive.
Merlins, Merlins, Merlins.
Yeah, but is it true that the rumor that's floating around that says that the 787 that arrived at Farnborough had John Ostrower's name written on the captain's side?
Yeah, David, those Merlins are really do make a nice sound, don't they?
Oh yeah. But what's interesting is when you watch the video, listen to the 787 as it's coming around the turn to go up the field, and listen to the pilot throttle the engines back and forth to keep in formation with the Spitfires. You hear this whoom, whoom, whoom as he would give it a little power, then pull it back. Give it a little power, pull it back.
Yeah,
it was a good piece of flying. The Spitfires definitely were firewalled, and the 787 was doing the best not to fall out of the sky. So, nice piece of flying by all hands.
Yeah, absolutely. Emirates, of course, was at the air show and made a big splash. We have a report from telegraph.co.uk, Farnborough Air Show 2010. Emirates orders 30 Boeing 777 planes for $9.1 billion. This is, as the article points out, this is only a month after Emirates ordered $11.5 billion of Airbus A380s. I think that was 32 aircraft.
And next week, Emirates will be buying the continent or the subcontinent that is known as the Saudi Arabian Peninsula to put all these aircraft on them.
Yeah. You know, there was an interview, I think also on Flight Global, with Emirates because, you know, many folks have said, you know, geez, you know, all these airplanes, what are they going to do with all this capacity? And Emirates' response was to say, well, yeah, this is a lot of airplanes, but delivery is over a 6 or 7 year period. These things are really stretched out. The total is big, but the time frame is significant. So it's not as if they're making, you know, immediate huge jumps in capacity, but it is still a lot of aircraft. And I find myself wondering, because why are they ordering this far out into the future? I don't know. Maybe they're negotiating suite volume discounts based on the number of aircraft.
I think they're going to start an airline.
You mean to tell me Boeing and Airbus is working on the buy one A380, get three free deal?
Could be. I know.
When you think about it, I mean, everybody's, for whatever it's worth, I mean, they have a lot of the industry worried. I mean, that you know, when you have a lot of money and you're the big kid on the block, you don't always have to be the best at something, and sometimes you can just overwhelm other people, and I think that's what some of the Europeans are concerned about.
Yeah, it's just sort of by inertia and size, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Take over the market.
But they're not buying anything like under, I mean, this 777 is the second largest Boeing aircraft. The A380 is the largest. There's no real backfill. They're buying these really big airplanes for capacity. It's sort of like, this is why we need Dan. God, I hated saying that.
Yeah.
But where's the underneath? You know, you got to have like 737s and 767s and A320s.
Well, not really. Not if your entire. Well, we've never seen a company. I don't think I can think of one that's based entirely on long range aircraft. Hmm. Is there? I'm not the airline geek that Dan is, but. I mean, that's essentially what they're trying to do, though.
Right.
I mean, they're just going to be basically a stopping off point for people connecting from the Far East and from Europe and from America and from South America. And
a long range hub.
At least that's kind of the way I took it to be.
Yeah.
The cross runways of the world.
Yep.
Yes.
We also saw the Airbus A400M at the air show. Bristol 24/7 has an article, A400M flies high as confidence takes off for Pentagon offer. That's right, Pentagon offer. Louis Galois, who is the CEO of EADS, said, "The Americans are interested. They do not have an aircraft with the same capabilities." He's predicting that the Pentagon could put this aircraft on their shopping list. I'm not sure I'd heard that before, but I don't know. David, does this fill a gap in the U.S. Cargo market?
Yeah, I guess if you want to create a gap. The A400M is a bridge between the C-17 and the C-130,
yep.
In this case the C-130J. Do we need a middle aircraft? Well, I guess that leaves that up to the boys in blue in the halls of the Pentagon, right. But... my gut reaction to that statement was, we'll get the A400s immediately after we get the EADS Airbus tanker. I don't know what role we would use it for. I mean, it's great for the European countries that are trying to find a niche aircraft to cover both roles, but I don't know where the benefit comes to us.
It's got cool motors.
And the flying demo was very impressive, but okay.
Yeah.
That I know a lot of impressive aircraft that do really cool demos that sort of like, eh. Somebody would need to explain to me the strategic or tactical airlift mission that the A400 would provide the United States. We have tactical airlifters. We have strategic airlifters. Mm-hmm. This is sort of a strat attack airlifter. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It seems like a lot of money to spend on an aircraft that we really don't need.
Well, it sounds like the Europeans are clearly making a play for the U.S. government piece of the pie. I mean, between this and the tanker.
Why shouldn't they?
Yeah.
Really. I mean, let's be serious. For decades, you know, we've been in a sell to everybody and their brother, and yet until some of the American airlines started buying Airbus products, we didn't have any airplanes from outside the U.S.
That's right.
But I do kind of agree with David that, although I was wondering how he was going to bring up the word tanker into the discussion at some point. So are we going to follow up on that, or are we just going to throw out that tanker teaser, David?
The tanker teaser. Somebody mentioned the T word.
Teaser. No, but seriously, so I agree.
I guess that would have been better than the tanked teaser.
Yeah. The tanked teaser, yes. Okay, all right.
Well, there goes my woman appreciation coupon for the week. Sorry, Aunt Benet.
Yeah, I didn't get yelled at hardly at all last week.
Well, good for you. I'm surprised.
My comment. Well, you know what? And because Benet was being so nice, I think that even though a certain other airplane geek called immense attention to my pseudo faux pas,
right?
And I don't think that particular airplane geek is with us at this point, is he? David, Max, Rob?
No.
Oh,
oh.
But
so
if it hadn't been for that little blabbermouth, the boy wonder, I would have been fine.
Well,
we'll leave that for next time.
Speaking of Aviation Week, the next article comes from Aviation Week. Virgin America signs MOU for up to 60 A320s
with Sharklet.
with Shark. That's right. Virgin America signed a memorandum of understanding for 40 firm and 20 option Airbus A320s. This is aircraft start delivery in 2013. Now, an interesting issue here, in when I read the first that first paragraph, it made me think, where is Virgin America coming from with regards to, you know, possible re-engining of the A320? And the second paragraph talks about that. It says an engine choice for the new aircraft will be announced when the order is finalized. The 28 A320 family aircraft currently operated by Virgin America are powered by CFM56s. When asked about the possibility of taking a re-engined A320, David Cush, president and CEO of Virgin America, said his is a green airline and that he is hopeful Airbus will come out with an option that will improve fuel efficiency. And if they do, we will be first in line. So, I mean, it stands to reason that since it's an open issue as to whether or not Boeing is going to re-engine the the 737.
The A737.
The 737, and if Airbus is going to re-engine the A320, that, you know, you don't want to kill off orders. So I'm sure that in these kinds of discussions, you know, with the airframers, the airlines are exploring all the opportunities, the possibilities for different alternative scenarios.
Sure, and the Virgin America people are also extremely excited about the fact that the city of Chicago just might decide to allow Virgin America to start operating at O'Hare.
Oh, is that right?
It hasn't been finalized yet, but that's certainly something that has been large on their radar screen for a long time.
There was a tidbit in here that the third paragraph actually said, of all the new aircraft will be equipped with Sharklets, Kirsch said the MOU for A320s, but if the carrier chooses to upgrade to 321s, the Sharklets would give those aircraft transcontinental range.
Ah.
So there's going to be a lot of stuff coming out of San Francisco. I mean, San Francisco is, besides a United hub, that could be their West Coast hub, and if they open up Chicago, that leaves the rest of the country wide open to Virgin America.
Mm. Ooh, it does indeed.
Yeah, very interesting.
You can imagine American and United are not going to be real happy about that.
No, definitely not. All right, I think that's it for Farnborough Airshow News. We did have one other story, and actually Rob and listener Mike had the same idea, and Mike sent in a recording to our listener line.
Hi, this is Micah Ingber from Portland, Maine. I'm a big fan of the Airplane Geeks. Listen to it every week. Have been for quite some time, and even actually hooked my 80-year-old mother on it. She listens to it now, too. I'm calling. There's been a big article up here in Portland, Maine, a whole bunch of news about the Kestrel, and that it's going to be built in the former Brunswick Naval Air Station. And they keep talking about it, hyping it as being the best thing that ever happened to Maine, and it's going to create all these wonderful jobs and do wonderful things. And I guess the chairman of Kestrel is a gentleman named Alan Klapmeyer, who is well-known in the private airplane business. I'm wondering if you can comment on it in your news of the day in terms of whether Kestrel is going to succeed. It seems like they make a product that other people make, such as Beechcraft and Cessna. And what's this going to do for Maine or for the private airline, private aircraft in general? It would be great to hear from you, and look forward to hearing the next show. Have a great day.
Well, Mike, you and Rob think alike. Rob, this is a single-engine turboprop, correct?
Oh, I thought you were going to say something about my grandmother and that thought alike in that particular. Thank you for not going there, though.
I like it. We have a new demographic.
Yeah.
80-year-old. The grandmothers.
We have the 80-year-olds in Maine demographic.
Yeah.
Check that one off the list, Rex.
So we could have a new version of the show called Airplane Geeks. Sonny? No, I think, listen, I think the fact that Alan Klapmeyer landed on his feet somewhere is alone a great thing. I mean, I've met him a number of times. He's a very smart guy. He's a very personable guy, too. And I know that it has not been, honestly, it's not been a fun time for him nor his brother, who is still at Cirrus, because, you know, when the two split up, it caused a real family feud that still goes on today. And I don't think anybody likes to see that. But the two of them worked very well together to put a product together that is the Cirrus, which I have lots of time in now that I absolutely love. I really do. And so if Alan can bring some of that kind of ingenuity to the Kestrel, I think it's a great opportunity. I'm just not so sure about the name. I know it's a bird of prey.
It's a bird, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's in the hawk family, I believe. But
a kestrel is an eagle that primarily is it's a bird of prey that fishes. So being from Maine and all the lakes and stuff, a kestrel is a perfect name from an aircraft coming from that land.
But it does work, doesn't it?
Oh, well, okay. Okay, as I said, I take it all back. Because thank you for that, David. I didn't know about that. That's a good point. I guess the people up in the Northeast really will have a tight connection to that. But a single engine turboprop, I mean, yeah. I mean, they're really. I mean, everybody would like to do that. I think, of course, who's out there? Cicada has the TBM. I mean, there's the Pilatus. I mean, the Caravan doesn't really fit into that because it's so slow. But it's built for a different kind of mission. But I know an awful lot of people who would love a single-engine turboprop if they could find one that had a little more cabin space than, say, the Piper does. I mean, it's really tight in there.
Is this kind of a less expensive alternative to a very light jet?
Oh, I'm sure it would be. I don't think I've seen much. In fact, Kate Doherty, who's the PR lady for Kestrel, just who happens to have been the PR lady at Cirrus, and I were talking last night, and she's going to be up here at the show. So hopefully by the next show, we'll have a little more information on specifics about the airplane. But I don't have a whole lot on it right now, so I don't know what the price point is. But I'm sure it's got to be less than a single-engine jet. I mean, the Vision jet from Cirrus is going to be 1.75. Well, I don't know. You know, that's actually interesting. I have to look at that. I don't know what the price point's going to be. I mean, we'll have to see how it works out.
Has the Kestrel flown yet?
I don't know. I have to admit, I don't have a lot of details about the airplane. I remember hearing about it some time back, and then it kind of went off everybody's radar for some reason. And then, you know, again, when I saw the note day before yesterday that Alan Klapmeyer had jumped into this, it kind of came back to my mind, but I still haven't seen an awful lot on the airplane. I can look up. Hey, listen, I know what I'll do. I'll look something up while I'm talking to you guys and then mention it, and it'll sound like I knew it all along.
You'll sound like Dan.
Oh, that would be kind of tacky, wouldn't it?
Like what I just sent you in the chat room with the picture of one flying?
Let me look. Oh, right. Yeah. Just like that, David. Yeah. You don't think the readers know that we're doing that, or the listeners, they don't know we're doing that, do they?
Nah.
Oh, there we go. That's a nice-looking little airplane.
Reminds me of a PC-21, though.
Hmm. Who designed this, Rob, do you know?
Again, I don't know. I do
1998
know.
By British entrepreneur Richard Noble and his company Farnborough Aircraft.
Ah, yes. Wasn't this called like the F1 or something like that at one point in its history? Yeah. All right, so clearly we have a little bit more to learn about this, but sounds like an exciting thing. Certainly, an exciting thing for Maine in terms of employment. And wish them well. And anything that Alan's involved in is sounds great. As we mentioned before, Dan couldn't join us for the recording, but he did send in a report concerning airline earnings. Here's Dan.
Well, hello everyone. This is Dan. Greetings from Oshkosh. Haven't made it to the show yet. Hopefully we'll be doing so later today. Hopefully it'll be a bit drier. That'd be really nice. But I just wanted to record a quick little segment with some news, just because I don't think I'll be able to make the recording this evening. It's been a very busy week news-wise. Obviously, across the pond, you had the Farnborough Air Show. Lots of interesting news coming outside there. And then back here stateside, we had 9 airlines sharing their financial results for the second quarter. Overall, pretty good. 8 of the 9 posted profits, which you hope you'd expect. It does vary by carrier, but in a lot of airlines, you would expect with the seasonal nature of the business, the second and third quarters to historically be some of the stronger ones to make your profits. So 8 of the 9 reporting profits. The only one who did report a loss was American, though it is important to note at least that was expected. So overall, pretty well. A lot of the stocks did decently, as some of the profits did exceed expectations. There was a little bit of nervousness out there, I think, after day one. I mean, Delta had pretty good earnings, but some of their revenue forecasts were a bit less exciting than I think some analysts expected. But once we got through the week and more airlines reported strong results, the sector did very well. So I think there are just a couple themes, because I think it'd be pretty boring just to share the results for each carrier. But one of the biggest themes was capacity restraint. There seems to be, legitimate concern among some analysts and other industry observers that, if one major carrier starts expanding capacity, well, first it's going to just drive down yields for everyone, and if it makes it worse, other carriers could say, well, if they're adding capacity, we need to respond competitively, and they'll just add more capacity, and kind of just really, which would really put the brakes on the recovery we're seeing. And I think most carriers were, really expressing during their earnings calls that they will exercise restraint. Like, Delta will be up a few percentage points at the end of the year, but they were stressing that this isn't really growth. It's just that comparisons were easier because this about a year ago we started seeing some cuts with H1N1 concerns. So if anyone's growing, it's going to be pretty slow. We did see some interesting fleet moves that I think generally reflect those trends, reflect those feelings, rather. For example, Delta was originally planning over the course of this year to reduce its fleet by 71 aircraft. That's on a net basis, because they were getting a few deliveries this year. That number is now 91. And then also there are 20 aircraft coming out of service next year. Now that's consolidated, so that includes a mainline and regional fleets. Unfortunately, when I asked Delta, they wouldn't give me a breakdown, but that's a sign of slowing down a little bit. AirTran was supposed to originally get 15 new 737-700s over the next 2 years. They've now cut down their deliveries for the next couple of years to 12 aircraft, and two of those will now be leased 717s instead of 737s. Continental deferred three 737s that were supposed to deliver next year. They wouldn't specify the variant on the call, but if you do compare their fleet plans from the first quarter to this quarter, there are just three 737-900s that aren't there anymore. So things like that. A little bit of growth, like Alaska is going to get two new 737-800s in a couple years, but that's kind of slow. I mean, those aren't coming until 2012. American, actually, excitingly enough, became the second American customer for Boeing's new Sky Interior on the 737-800. So they ordered 35 of those, but they noted that those will be used to replace those will be used to replace MD-80 aircraft, which they have been doing in the past, so not really growth. And American's saying that what's really driving that decision is efficiency. Apparently, a 737-800 will burn about 800,000 gallons less of fuel over the course of a year than an MD-80 would. So it's efficiency that seems to be the real driver of that decision. So it seems, a lot of carriers just being very slow. Words like, moderate, tepid to describe the recovery going on. That, the economy is still not in the best shape. And I think, I think if the way we're going is I think eventually these very large 20-30% revenue gains are probably going to be going away, especially now. Over the course of the year, comparisons compared to 2009 have gotten easier and easier. And in the next couple months, they're going to become a bit harder. So it seems that there's some solid, cautious optimism among the industry right now. Of course, the only carrier to really break that capacity restraint idea is Virgin America. Their current plan is to get 18 new A320 aircraft over the next 18 months, and then from They just committed 44 orders over the next few years, I believe through 2012 through 2016, with options for 20 more. So they seem to be growing. That seems a little ambitious for me. It'll be interesting to see how they develop their network. I flew them for the first time a couple weeks ago. Really enjoyed it. I think we'll have to see how they do. I'm interested in seeing their quarterly results, but since they're a private company, we're going to have to wait a couple more months for the DOT to report theirs. So capacity strain was a real theme. Airlines being careful with the fleet. In some cases, these earnings calls didn't sound like airlines earnings calls, though. I mean, Alaska Airlines was saying, it seems like we have a little bit more cash. We're going to have to see if, you know, dividends, pay down debt, or reinvest in the business. And it was actually seems like a pleasant problem. And it seems that other airlines, now that they are improving their financial performance, that they're now paying down debt early. So that was actually something pretty optimistic in my mind. So overall, a pretty good week, and it seems like just the carriers are being as careful as possible, that we are seeing some small capacity growth, but still compared to 2008-2007, you know, still a further reduced schedule than what we were sawing compared to those. So I was pretty happy. We do have a couple of players left to report. Hawaiians this week. Southwest is a little late this week. So just since obviously they're just such a major player in the domestic industry now, how they're doing. And then obviously a couple weeks later we have the regionals going. So overall, good week. Great revenue numbers. I mean, especially international. United was reporting unit revenue gains in excess of 50% in a couple of regions. I think so we might be coming to an end there, but I was pretty happy. Thanks for listening. I'm really looking forward to Oshkosh, and I will hopefully be back live next week, and can't wait to talk about it. And if there are any listeners you know, at the show this week, Rob and I are there. Just shoot us an email. You just shoot the general show inbox, the email, and it'd be great to meet up with you. So thanks a lot, and talk to you soon. Bye.
Well, David, I think Dan has introduced yet another type of background sounds to the podcast.
Clearly he's at Sloshkosh, because he's either walking around the grounds or he's decided to podcast in his tub. I'm not sure which, but this nautical podcast has been brought to you by Dan Webb.
Thank you, Dan, and we'll look forward to having you back live next week. All of us who are not at Oshkosh are terribly envious, so have fun. And now with This Week in Aviation, here's David Vanderhoof, the official Airplane Geeks historian.
Thanks, Max. Welcome to This Week in Aviation, Volume 2, Episode 22, June 25th through the 31st. We're back to normal order again this week, folks. July 25th, 1909, Louis Berlioz flies his Berlioz 11 monoplane 22 miles from Calais to Dover. The flight took the little monoplane with its three-cylinder engine, developing 25 pounds of horsepower, 37 minutes. The French Navy provided a destroyer to escort him, but he quickly ran past the destroyer, and for 10 minutes in the center of the channel, he lost sight of land and the destroyer. Berlioz would receive 1,000 pounds from the Daily Mail newspaper for making the flight. Adjusted for inflation, that would be 79,000 pounds in modern-day currency. Berlioz would go on to design an additional 800 aircraft before he died. July 27th, 1909, Orville Wright tests the first U.S. Army airplane, flying 1 hour, 12 minutes, and 40 seconds. That was a world record for duration. The flight had Lieutenant Frank Lamb aboard. The flight demonstrated the Army's requirement of an aircraft must remain aloft for over an hour with a passenger aboard. 3 days later, on July 30th, he broke the 40-mile-an-hour requirement, going a blistering 42.5 miles per hour. The additional 2 miles per hour entitled the Wrights to a $5,000 bonus. On July 27th, 1996, at Cannon Air Force Base in New Mexico, The F-111A is officially retired from the United States service. Upon the retirement, the United States Air Force officially named the aircraft Aardvark, the name given to the crews because of its long, sloped shovel nose. The EF-111A Sparkvarks would retire 2 years later. Unfortunately, the pig, as it is known down under, is a very endangered beast. They all will be scrapped when the RAAF, or the RAF, retires them at the end of the year. On July 29, 1952, an RB-45C Tornado makes the first nonstop crossing of the Pacific Ocean by a jet. The 91st Reconnaissance Squadron jet was refueled in the air twice by KB-29Ps. The flight from Elmendorf Air Force Base, Alaska, to Yokohama, Japan, lasted 9 hours and 50 minutes. The crew for the flight won the prestigious McKay Award from the United States Air Force. And on July 31, 1993, the United States Senate approves Women for Combat Aircraft. This was based on guidance from Secretary of Defense Les Aspin. First flights occurred during the week of July 25th through the 31st. July 28, 1935, the Boeing B-17 Flying Fortress. On July 30th, 1954, the Grumman F-11F Tiger. On July 29th, 1937, the Lockheed L-15 Super Electra. July 27th, 1949, the de Havilland DH-106 Comet, and lastly, the Northrop F-5A Freedom Fighter first flew on July 30th, 1959, and that's the way it was, July 25th through the 31st, and this is David M. Vanderhoof, your Airplane Geeks historian, signing out.
Thanks, David. The F-111, I'm not very knowledgeable with that. How extensively was that used by the U.S. Air Force?
The F-111, otherwise known as McNamara's mistake, the TFX, was originally designed as a multi-role aircraft for both the United States Navy as well as the United States Air Force.
Ah.
Originally, the F-111A was going to be a tactical attack aircraft with a swept wing for nuclear delivery and long-range low attack. The F-111B was to have a uprated radar and the ability to operate from aircraft carriers. The F-111B was to carry the forerunner of what became the Phoenix missile of F-14 fame. The Navy hated the aircraft and worked very hard to make sure that it wasn't satisfactory, and then went on to take the lessons learned from the F-111B and create the Tomcat.
Oh, very interesting.
The F-111 would have... F-111As flew in Vietnam, had a series of crashes which caused the aircraft to be sent back stateside and reworked due to their low-level radar. The F-11E would become a more potent bomber with the better low-level terrain following radar and would fight in Panama. The F-111F won its first claim to fame by flying from Great Britain for Operation El Dorado Canyon, where they flew down around Spain, up through the Mediterranean, being refueled by KC-10s, and then were used in the attacks against Muammar Gaddafi in Libya, which was Operation El Dorado Canyon. The F-111Fs would then go on to fight in Operation Desert Storm successfully, delivering one of them was there was an oil rig on fire in. And there's gun camera footage of them dropping an electro-optical glide bomb on that oil rig to stop it from leaking and blowing it up so it couldn't be used to spill additional oil in the Gulf. The only other derivative that was very successful was the F-111As were sent to Grumman, ironically, to become EF-111As, which was the equivalent of the United States Navy's Prowler.
Right.
It had the same electronics suite, only it was flown by two people instead of four like the Navy does. And that would go on to be known as the F-111 Sparkvark. One of my all-time favorite names for.
Yeah,
but basically, it was different. The same electronics as in the EA-6B, only optimized for a one crewman versus the three and a pilot.
Now, just so everybody gets the picture here, David, you said all that off the top of your head, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. Okay. Thanks a lot, David.
The didgeridoo means it's time for the Australia News Desk. Here's two of the craziest guys we could find south of the equator. It's Steve Vischer and Grant McHaren from the Plain Crazy Down Under podcast.
Dateline, July 25th. 2010.
Well, g'day folks, it's Steve Vischer here for the Australia Desk for episode 107 of the Airplane Geek Show, and with me as always is the much healthier sounding Grant McHaren. Geez, you sound a lot better this week, mate.
Yeah, mate, it's amazing the difference a week can make. My health is much improved over where it was last Sunday. Still got the residual dregs, but not that letting it hold me back.
Yeah, bring on the summertime. I'm glad we've passed the winter solstice down here in this part of the world, and the days are starting to get slightly longer, so hopefully the warm weather is not too far away.
Indeed. One can only hope. Although the cool, crisp weather is great to go flying in.
It is true. Well, Grant, speaking of heat, it looks like the Australian International Pilots Association is turning up the heat on the Labor Party, the Liberal Party and the Greens, the three major political parties in this country, as the election looms. And this has to do with the Jetstar proposing to set up a Singapore base that we reported on a few episodes back.
Yeah, we've mentioned this a couple of times recently. Jetstar are looking to base their A330s and then their 787s out of Singapore. Now, they're coaxing Australians to relocate to Singapore, but part of the relocation involves a change of pilot agreement. So while you're getting some nice benefits and all that, you're not getting the same Jetstar pilot agreement as you would if you were here in Australia. And as a result of that, as we mentioned previously, the Pilots Association, their union, is saying, hey, this is unfair, this is not real. These guys, everyone will think they're actually Australians, but they're flying under different conditions. I find one really interesting part in here is AIPA President Barry Jackson warned that Australian skies could be full of foreign pilots on low wages and with differing training and experience. Hello, that's already the case right now. Yeah. Garuda flies in and so on, and other airlines. So what he's really trying to say there, though, is a bit of a misquote, and it's interesting how different news sources can have it spun different ways, because the Australian newspaper had that quote and saying that he was concerned that they were setting up a flag of convenience, whereas Australian Aviation said that we believe Australian employment law is applicable to these new pilots recruited by this Australian company to fly into Australia from Singapore. So it's not that he's really trying to say, oh my God, there's going to be all these terrible pilots coming in. It's more that it's an Australian company. It just has a base in Singapore. They should be paid like Australian pilots.
And the thing is too, Grant, that we live in a global economy and there's plenty of Australian pilots flying for foreign carriers all over the world. I mean, there's the...
Look at Emirates.
I was just going to say that's probably the best example. I mean, and I believe Anthony Simmons, our infrequent flyer on our show, described them as the United Nations of the sky at Emirates Airlines. Yep. And it's very true. I mean, I actually know quite a few people here that are flight attendants for Emirates, for instance.
Yep. Yeah, Emirates and Cathay are two of the big ones that Aussies quite often wind up flying for.
Yeah, and particularly after the big pilot strike back in 1989, where all Australian airline pilots resigned en masse and all lost their seniority. Now, a lot of those pilots didn't come back and fly in Australia for many, many years, and many of them went to Asia. I really think he's either been misquoted there, or that's just a very poorly worded statement and, a little bit colloquial, considering that it would grab the headlines, and it has, and it is election time here, so... But good on him for pushing that. I mean, we've talked before, Grant, on the Ausdesk about, if it's new, it's JQ, this sort of thing. And they really do use Jetstar as a sounding board to see if they can get these sorts of hybrid agreements across the line. It says here that they're looking for New Zealand, Singaporean and Australian pilots. But they're only, interestingly enough, they're only talking about basing two aircraft there at the moment.
Yeah, it's an initial kickstart and get it going. But once those 787s come in and the A330s go back to Qantas itself, where they'll probably get used on domestic high capacity routes between like Melbourne and Sydney and Brisbane and so on, that's when you can expect to see the Singapore base expand a lot. They're also basing out of New Zealand. They've got A330s doing New Zealand to the Pacific and the US, and New Zealand through Australia and on, or New Zealand direct Singapore. So they're really trying to work whatever levers they can so that they don't have to have people based and paid in Australia doing the flying, even though the aircraft may be transiting through or appearing to originate from Australia.
Yeah, so we'll keep an eye on that one, and the Australian election campaign rolls on. I think it's still got about another 4 weeks to go. And the interesting thing here, Grant, is that I haven't seen any comment at all on this issue, or actually any other aviation issues, by any of our politicians in the mainstream media, at least.
You can tell it's not going to be raised, because when Australia did the big infrastructure
projects, and they were doing infrastructure spending, setting up infrastructure projects to try and pump prime the economy and keep us all going through the GFC. Aviation was never mentioned as an infrastructure, transport infrastructure. Never mentioned.
Yeah, actually, at the moment, it's railways and high-speed rail. They keep talking about high-speed rail. It's absolutely not even an option in this country, in my opinion. But at the moment, railways seems to be grabbing all the headlines. Railways and roads, big vote winners, unfortunately, for the aviation game. Grant, also, unfortunately, this week in the aviation industry, we've lost a pioneer.
That's right. Dr. David Warren, the inventor of the black box flight recorder, passed away just around the end of last week, on the weekend area. Dr. David Warren, he invented the black box flight recorder after he was investigating a comet crash and trying to figure out what was going on. He'd also lost his father in an aviation accident flying between the mainland of Australia and Tasmania over Bass Strait. And so he came up with the idea of a great way of recording voice and instrument information. And his original system was able to record the last few hours. The twist here, and the really typically Australian thing, is that when he showed it to government, they said, nah, no one's going to need that. And when he showed it to Australian Air Force, they said, you're going to hear more expletives than information. No one that he showed it to here in Australia saw any benefit from it at all, which is very typical of what happens in Australia here. There's been a lot of great inventions and concepts come up with here in Australia that have never been supported by the government. And true to form, neither was this one. It didn't get traction until he was able to show it to someone from the UK who got the picture and jumped all over it. And now every single aircraft, commercial airliner out there has got a black box, and it's thanks to this Australian invention. He's recently passed away. He is remembered in the black box, but also Qantas have named one of their A380s after Dr. David Warren.
Yeah, and the ironic thing is too, Grant, isn't it, that even though that invention ended up going offshore to be developed, Australia in 1960 became the first country in the world to rule that all Australian airlines should in fact carry a flight recorder. So yep. That's the ironic thing about all of that.
Well, look, you know, if you can, the latest thing that's going on these days, especially after Air France 447, is satellite-based systems that continuously beam primary information back up. Not the full. Naturally, the black box recorder will always record more detail, more information, more channels, etc., and store more longer. So the black box on the aircraft will have the most comprehensive capture of everything, but some salient information and perhaps even cockpit chatter is likely to be recorded and sent out on satellites. That's the latest push that's going on.
It took a long time for Dr. Warren to be recognised for his work too, but finally in 2001 they were awarded, Dr. Warren along with his team, were awarded the Lawrence Hargraves Award for their work. Also he received, he was actually made an officer of the General Division of the Order of Australia in 2002, which is a Queen's birthday honour.
Order of Australia is a very prestigious award for Australians to win, allocated within Australia.
Yeah, so Dr. Warren survived by his wife Ruth, 4 children and 7 grandchildren, so our commiserations to his family, a great Australian inventor, and sad to see him gone.
But his legacy lives on in so many ways.
Very true. Now, something else that's living on, Grant, is the MRH-90. We've been talking about these in the last couple of Ausdiscs, and they have been grounded, of course. We've reported that one of them suffered a catastrophic engine failure, which resulted in all the rest of them being grounded. But this week, they've taken back to the skies, which is good news.
Yeah, it's great news. They're back up, they're flying, and apparently a software patch has been developed for the engines to prevent the incorrect start sequence from recurring. Hello, that's what took them out. What was happening to these engines was that when they were being started hot, they weren't going through a correct hot start sequence. And they've now, once they knew what to look for, they went through the engine logs, the computerized engine logs for all these helicopters, and discovered that all the engines had gone through improper hot start procedures, causing damage to bearings and seals. And as a result of the bearing and seal damage on the incident aircraft, the main compressor rotor actually impacted the casing and shredded itself.
Yeah, so pretty nasty stuff, but good to see they've got that one up and running, and now it should make for actually some very hot competition between them and the Sikorsky people who we were talking about last week, who were looking at bringing in the MH-60R Romeo. So, that should make some interesting reporting for us coming up in the future. Just one thing before we go, though, we just thought we'd mention this week that as Rob and Dan will be at Oshkosh during the week, and they'll be holding their Be an Airplane Geek for the Day competition, well, we've decided that we'll chip in on that. So what we're going to offer to the Airplane Geeks listeners, if you're going to front up there and participate in the Airplane Geeks session there at Oshkosh, we will donate a an Airplane Geeks Australia Desk t-shirt to the best impersonation of Steve and or Grant. So we'll just add that to the fun. Of course, it won't be judged by us because, sadly, Grant, we won't be there. But we figure that Rob and Dan have listened to our voices over the past 12 months for long enough, and they should be now expert in the good Australian accent. So,
Crikey, mate!
Struth, there you go. So, there you go, folks. If you haven't heard enough, plaincrazydownunder.com, or you can listen to us on any of the back issues of the Airplane Geek Show for the last 12 months, and we want to hear the best. G'day, folks. It's Steve here. Type impression.
Because just remember, guys, it's what's down under that counts.
There you go. And we will look forward to hearing the entries. Of course, by the time we hear them, they'll already have been judged. But we'll be quite happy to donate a t-shirt and we'll send that out in the mail.
Correct.
So there's a bit of homework for our listeners. Until next week, I'm Steve Vischer.
And I'm Grant McCarran.
Cheers, folks, and have fun at Oshkosh. Those of you
that are going, jealous.
Yeah,
jealous.
Jealous. Jealous.
Next time I'll start swimming earlier.
I told you we shouldn't have swum back now.
Folks, this is Steve.
No, you're not eligible, Rob.
Thank God. That's probably what everybody is saying.
Yeah.
Is this the part where we're supposed to say members of and contestants of must not be members of the organization or families? Please refer to our listener for to rules and regulations for proper. Never mind.
Yeah.
I think I know where you're headed. But it's early Sunday. See, we're not in our usual late Sunday kind of
form,
you know, kind of chill out kind of mode. So, but you know how that goes. So,
all right, on to listener mail. We have just a couple of quick listener emails.
Did you say what did we do wrong this week?
No, we had no negative emails this week. Hooray! Seb wrote in. Seb's a longtime listener, and he has he attended the Royal International Air Tattoo event, and he commented that the star of the show by a mile was the U.S. Air Force F-22 Raptor demo. It was the first time he'd seen it displayed, and all he can say is, wow. The other great display was from the Airbus A400M, which looks like a very capable heavy lift transport. Also of interest was the Sukhoi Superjet 100, which made a single pass of the runway on the way to Farnborough. Seb writes, I have posted all my photos to Flickr, and the link, we'll put it in the show notes, but it's also in the comments for episode 106.
Why do they call it a tattoo?
You know, I don't know. Is it something?
I never quite understood. I mean, I'm actually not being a smart aleck here. I'm not going to say something funny about something on somebody's arm or... But I never quite understood the relationship between tattoo and music. Maybe somebody, David, you know all those unusual answers. Do you have an answer to that?
Tattoo is a Scottish term for a military presentation. The Royal International Air Tattoo is usually associated with Farnborough, and a tattoo is various military organizations coming to present their colors. So military tattoo is when you get everybody in their dress blues and their dress uniforms and they come together to march and present and show their colors. So that's what a tattoo is. And the RIAT is probably, for Europe, the biggest collection of military aircraft for an air show and usually occurs the weekend before Farnborough.
Huh. Now, Rob, you really didn't think that David didn't know all that, right?
You know, every time we have one of these darn things, I am just more and more amazed at what this man knows. I mean, time I realize that we all have our strengths, but boy, I'll tell you, it doesn't matter. I can give you something on a moment's notice, David, and you have the answer. Do you realize how lucky we are to have him, Max? You know, better not. He's going to want a raise now, isn't he?
This is the second time this episode that this came up, though. Before you came on, you'd have to listen to that part because David was awfully impressive on a question I just flipped out of the blue.
Okay, we better not do this too much.
He's going to get a swelled head.
Yeah, it's going to go. It's going to go.
If I get a swelled head, that just means there's more space for colossal amounts of useless knowledge.
Oh, that's good.
Well said.
We got another email from John. He said, hello, geeks. I'm a lifelong aviation geek, have been in the business, both commercial and now corporate, for over 23 years. I found your site based on word of mouth from my friend Phil Derner Jr. He was on your Jeopardy podcast as well as episode 86, and I've been listening since and kicking myself that I hadn't found you sooner. Anyways, I just wanted to touch on your story about the geese eradication program in New York City. We talked about that last week, I guess. You guys mentioned that the dumps are what's keeping these sky rats, that's in quote, sky rats around, and I couldn't agree more. What really makes me scratch my head is that just northeast of LaGuardia Airport is a sanitation plant. And John sent in a link to a photo of that plant. He says this was taken from the Grand Central Parkway overpass, which is adjacent to the numbers for runway 31 at LaGuardia. So thanks for John for photographically verifying what we said about attractive nuisances and wildlife around airports.
So we're treating the symptom and not the problem.
Right, right. That's the point. Rounding up geese rather than removing the attraction.
No, but let's be serious too. Every spring, I mean, the geese come back. I mean, they're not going to get rid of them. I mean, other than for the short term with what they're trying.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I mean, geese do return to the same locations. So I guess presumably, if you remove the population, you know, maybe you'll see a decrease in the numbers for a period of time until, I don't know, new geese come in and say, hey, this is a great place. Let's hang out here for the summer.
Do they say that? Geese really?
Sure. Don't you talk to geese? Don't you listen to what they have to say? All right. Well, I think that's it. Yeah. I think that's enough. I just wanted to thank Tim and Grace and Huss for sending their audio reports from Farnborough. Hopefully our listeners at AirVenture can also do the same. We look forward to those. We should also thank Mike for his voicemail recording.
Well, Max, you cutie.
way back in the day when I used to.
Yeah, wouldn't it be funny if Grandma calls in and we find out she really doesn't talk like a grandma?
She's probably going to stop listening to us after all the cracks we've made.
You know, and actually, you know what? Because I know Benet always tells me she listens to all the shows. She's going to go, you know, you guys were doing well, and then you took that left turn right at the end of that last show.
Yeah.
You were going well, and then you just blew it again.
Threw it away.
But we can't help ourselves, can we?
Not usually. Thanks also to Steve Fisher and Grant McCarron from the Playing Crazy Down Under podcast for the Australia Desk Report. And let's see. Let's tell folks, Rob, how can people get a hold of you, especially people who are at Farnborough this week? Sorry.
Who are at Farnborough this week?
That was last week.
Well, this week at Oshkosh, I mean, certainly they can find me on at JetWine on Twitter. And we're doing our Airplane Geeks JetWine Flight Blogger Av Week. Oh, gosh, I don't know who else is going to be there. A whole bunch of people on Tuesday afternoon at 4
my
o'clock.
Transponder.
At one of the pavilions. Yes, and my transponder. Thank you. Rod would be very upset. So I hope people will make it to that. But actually, and one thing I just wanted to mention, too, besides saying jetwine.com, of course, which I get to say, is that all those people that can't make it to Oshkosh that would have auditioned for role of Grant or Steve – should call in to the Geeks Hotline or either at the number I'm sure we're going to give you in a minute, or to send us a little audio file somehow that they record on their laptop and let's hear how you sound, because we want to make sure that it's not just the people that are Oshkosh, but there may be others that would be great they're not supposed to be replacements for Steve and Grant, are they?
Well, maybe if they're really good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's see how good you guys are.
It'd be tough to top Steve and Grant, though.
Yeah. Well, I hope everybody makes it to Oshkosh.
And David, how can folks find you?
You can find me on my blog at whatjustflewby.com. You can find me at Twitter at DM Vanderhoof. And I will be watching the tweets and sitting back and wishing I was there with all you guys out in Oshkosh this week.
Terrific. And I'm Max Flight. You can find me at 30,000feet.com or on Twitter at Max Flight. Be sure to see airplanegeeks.com for show notes. Also, listener comments. Leave us some comments. Follow us on Twitter at Airplane Geeks. And our email address is thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. And, of course, we're also on Facebook.
What if people wanted to call and leave a message?
If they wanted to leave us a voicemail?
Yeah.
And if you want to call the Airplane Geeks, you can dial 361-GEEKS01.
Thank you, Binet. Okay, thanks for listening. One way you can help us is help spread the word. Tell your friends about the Airplane Geeks podcast. Be sure to join us again next week as we talk aviation on the Airplane Geeks podcast. Bye, everybody.
Good night.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Okay. Dateline.
Blooper number one.
And we will now commence the official clearing of the throat.
Good evening.
Hello.
Okay, you ready?
Yep, go for it.
Yeah, no, it's amazing the difference a week, mates. can't speak, but do sound better.
One way you can help us is help spread the word. Tell your friends about the Airplane Geeks podcast.
Yeah, you never do that anymore. You used to say, and what do you guys think we could do? And then David and I were supposed to say, tell your friends. But
right, okay, we can do that. We can say, and you know how else our listeners can help the podcast? That's your cue.
Tell your friends.
See, that's why I stopped doing it, because the enthusiasm just wasn't there anymore.
Well, I was trying to get synced up with Rob, and there was nothing there.
He didn't take the bait.
Okay, well, wait. Let's do it one more time. All right, we'll do
three,
a three.
Two, one. Tell your
friends.
Your friends.